Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show. You won't admit you love me, and so how am I ever to know? You only tell times I ask you, and then I ask you over again. You only answer perhaps, perhaps, perhaps. If you can't make your mind up, we'll never get started. If you really love me, say yes. But if you don't, dear, confess. And please don't tell me. Perhaps, perhaps, perhaps. You can't make your mind up, we'll never get started. And I don't wanna wind up being parted, broken hearted. So if you really love me, say yes. But if you don't, dear, confess. And please don't tell me. Perhaps, 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 perhaps.
Cake, perhaps, 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 from their second studio album, Fashion Nugget, released on the 17th of September in 1996. On the Capricorn record label. The album sold over 1 million copies and had a parental advisory sticker in the United States of America for profanity in the two songs Nugget and I Will Survive.
I Will Survive is a great version.
So is this one. They're really funny, these guys.
I first heard them in a record store in Santa Monica.
Okay.
That was the first time I heard Cake, and they were playing I Will Survive. Right. The first it came on, and I said to the guy in the record store, I said, who is this? And he said, it's Cake. And I said, well, it's fantastic. And he said, I know. He said, they come in here all the time. So I went and got the CD immediately and listened to them, and I have every CD that Cake. Correction, we now have every CD that Cake have ever made. So it's a marvellous band, absolutely marvellous. I love that horrible guitar. His guitar sounds horrible. It always does, it sounds like he's scratching.
It's his comedic.
Voice, yeah, his voice is scratching. The bass on that is actually pretty distorted. It sounds like quite... it's a great song. I mean, you know, it really is. But I think the treatment of it is so interesting. You know, it's just wonderful, I love it.
Well, they came from Sacramento, and this song was a popular song by Cuban songwriter Osvaldo Farage. But this, the English version, was actually the lyrics were written by Joe Davis, really. So you've got people like Buena Vista Social Club, Bing Crosby.
Bing.
Doris. Of the day.
Ah, Doris Day, okay.
Yeah, Emma Bunton.
Oh, dear.
And recently, Gregory Porter. They've all covered it.
All right, Porter.
And also, I do recall a Starlight and Campbell live stream that we did, which was, remember, and so instead of the trumpet, I played kazoo.
I remember.
And honestly, we cried with laughter. It was the funniest song I think we've ever ever played for a live stream.
It was fantastic.
Oh, it was. I couldn't look at you because we kept sniggering. We were like kids, weren't we?
Yeah.
Just the two of us during lockdown when we're doing these live streams. It's like, oh, God.
It's a fantastic record, though.
Can you imagine, though, it's sort of the trumpet, the kazoo, it's great. I sounded like Such and Sweep.
It was amazing. But the band came up with the name Cake, not referring to food, but the name is meant to be like when something insidiously becomes a part of your life, more like as something that cakes onto your shoe and sort of just sits there until you get rid of it, which I think is bizarre.
Yeah, because, yeah.
You'd never think about
it. Caked on.
And you know, I didn't even know about that. I didn't even. I've just been looking at notes now.
Well, secret
done.
Notes.
But they're noted for McRae's sarcastic lyrics and monotone vocals and the wide range of musical influences, including country music, mariachi.
Oh no!
Funk, Iranian folk music, and hip hop. But it's the mariachi that I love because throughout all the records have mariachi trumpet in them somewhere. And it just sounds amazing.
It makes you smile.
Well, it does. It makes me smile. It makes me guffaw with laughter.
We'll be right back.
White Denim. Ha ha, ha ha, yeah. From their seventh studio album, Stiff. I'm going to say it again. Stiff. Released on 20th of March 2016 on the Downtown record label. Four-piece from Austin, Texas. I've been to Austin. I like Austin. Well, I used to like Austin. It's probably changed now completely.
Wow. Everyone's moving to Austin because of Joe Rogan and Elon Musk's now moved out there. And
oh, no.
It's become a complete hub for comedy as well. The arts have just taken off.
That's why Elon's there. Whoa, 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 boom, boom, psh, I'm here all week, folks. Well, so that's the next hour anyway. Nashville, of course, you know, the home of American music, which everybody's gravitated to Nashville. But, you know, now Austin is certainly a second. You know,
yeah,
are they playing second fiddle? I don't know. It could be first fiddle or cello or something. I have no idea. But they have South by Southwest there, which is both a digital festival for web people and also, of course, music thing. You know,
yeah,
we've never been, but you know, it's a sort of place we'd like to go and hang out. But again, I think a lot of these. Things like that, these shows, these weeks, these exhibitions, you know,
it's conventions.
It's fraught with of competitive, you know, bands, and we're really not into that.
Mm.
You know, trying to get one up on each other and trying to, you know, get in that limelight and all that. And you know, perhaps if we did, it might be good. But
well,
we're not
sure
really
there's a lot of
that.
Deals and lots of you know, A&R and labels and stuff all talking and, you know, sorting stuff out. I mean, obviously. That's the kind of thing, and that's what happens in industry. But I didn't know that Ethan Johns produced this record.
Etho,
son of
Glyn Johns. When we first started this show, I killed him off.
You did by
because
accident.
I actually thought he was dead, and I said the late great, and then I realised he wasn't after looking him up because after that he produced some really good records. So I'm very glad he's not dead, because he's one of the engineers from that early time that is still around. You know, he did a lot of work with the Beatles. You know, he did a lot of work with Faces. He did a lot of work with The Who, of course. He's done a lot of work with, well, everybody, really.
Yeah.
And he's produced some beautiful, beautiful records. I love his production.
Mm.
You know, anyway, but Ethan, his son, has really taken on his mantle, because when you listen to this, it sounds like somebody's been recorded in a shed. And one of his techniques, I'm not quite sure that he's done it on this record, is that he records everybody together, including the vocals, and he ignores bleed into microphones. And what I mean by that, if you think about it, if you've got a rock and roll band in a room and a vocalist singing, you know, the volume of his voice or her voice is trying to compete with the volume from the rest of the band going into the microphone, and he ignores that.
Mm.
And this, I really love it because it's so simple. There's hardly any reverb or anything. It's really, really clean. It's really 70s sounding. And what a great riff. Bang, dang,
doo, 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 it is, bang, isn't it? It makes bang, you feel bang, good.
And then at the end, you've got that voice box coming in. Wah, wah, sort of, you know, well, made famous originally by Pete Frampton on Frampton Comes Alive, you know. Wondering how you're feeling, but he started off with the voice box and Joe Walsh and Rocky Mountain Way, of course. But it's made an appearance on this record. It sounds great.
Well, you know what they did is I've only just read this now. Is the track was playing that so they recorded at Echo Mountain in Asheville, North Carolina, and James Petrelli, who's the lead vocalist and band leader, they had a couple of guys leaving the band, and so they wanted to approach this as if the seventh album, as if it was their debut again.
Mm.
Going back to basics, only using 16 tracks. So, and after a 20-minute phone call on the phone with Ethan, they sent some demos. He said, well, you'll be fine. And they rocked into the studio, and they didn't really know what they were going to do. They had a couple of ideas. And just played it through a couple of times, Ethan was going to work with him. And he said, it's the first time I've had a producer at the beginning and a producer at the end, all the way through. Interesting, yeah. For the van. But and he just said, you know, is there anything else that we can embellish? Can we do that? And he would say quite often, no, that's a take.
Well, you know, if you've got a good band, though, it's easy. It's easier to record a good band because you just sling the microphones up. And that's what Glyn Johns said about Led Zeppelin 1. He said, you know, he said, how did he get that drum sound? He said, well, it was Bonzo Bonham, you know, it was John Bonham. And he just started playing. And I left these mics up in a certain position from recording some guitars. And that was the birth of the Glyn Johns mic technique, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, all you did with Led Zeppelin on that album is just push the faders up. It didn't matter what was going on, you just pushed the faders up and it sounded fantastic because the band was so good, you know. And you listen to that first record, you know? But and you listen to this, it's not similar at all, but in some ways it is, you know. I mean, the drums are really good. Jeff Olson, he does a great job on the bass. It's really groovy. And James Petrelli mentions Curtis Mayfield as an influence behind the soul sound of this track. And it is, isn't it?
You know? It is. R&B.
It's really great, you know. And it's just got such energy and for those people who don't understand what 16-track means, it means that you can record 16 things simultaneously. So in other words, when you're recording, so you can record 16 things, like one might be a bass guitar, one might be a guitar, drums might be, you have a kick drum, a snare drum. But 16 is not an awful lot.
No.
You know, because when we're recording live, we use 24. But when we're mixing down, i.e. when we've got 32 that we can bring back into the console, you know, so you got 32 tracks, which, you know, with our new records, some of them are going boo, and some of them are going and then you've got Ugo on drums going, making some very strange noises because he's got some cymbals that sound like dustbin lids. It sounds like he's beating them with a hammer going, but it sounds
the
fantastic.
Splash, yeah, they're cool.
Yeah, but it's a great band, isn't it? And I think this is my favourite record of theirs.
I love the name White Denim.
Just a silly phase I'm going through, and just because I call you up, don't get me wrong, don't think you got it made. I'm not in love, no, no.
Thank you.
whiskey stain. There's lying there. So don't you ask me to give it back. I know you know it doesn't mean that much to me.
CC. I'm Not in Love, released in the UK in May 1975 as the second single from the band's third album, the original soundtrack on Mercury Records. It became the second of the group's three number one singles in the UK between 1973 and 78, topping the UK singles charts for 2 weeks. It was the band's breakthrough hit outside the UK, topping the charts in Canada, the Republic of Ireland, as well as peaking within the top 10 in several other countries, including Australia, Germany, New Zealand, Norway, and the United States. And they won three Ivor Novello Awards in 1976 for Best Pop Song, International Hit of the Year, and Most Performed British Work.
Written by Eric Stewart and Graham Gouldman, but mostly by Stewart, as a response to his wife's declaration that he did not tell her often enough that he loved her.
Oh.
That's lovely, isn't it?
Hmm.
But, you know, this was recorded in my home city of Manchester. Of course, you know, I've come from Bury, of course, but the nearest city, 8 miles away, is Manchester. And we could have put this on the show last week about Manchester, but we decided to put it in this week instead. But I know a lot about Strawberry because I work there an awful lot as a session guitar player, and also I have been in there producing as well. It's great. Unfortunately, I never actually used the Helios console that was in there. A beautiful recording console. Phil Brown, our mate, loves Helios. I love Helios. Everybody loved Helios. But by the time I got there, I can't remember what was in after. I think it might have been an API or something. Anyway, it was a magnificent recording console. And, of course, Helios was the same console that recorded Led Zepp 1.
Mm-hmm.
There we are. So, anyway, let's go on to this because it is a delicious record. And, you know, we were talking in the last little talk about White Denim, about the number of tracks that are used when recording that album. They used 16. And I remember they had a 24-track studio in Strawberry. But how they did it, and all those vocals were done by just recording one note in a chromatic scale. So every note in the scale, all the way up, of Godley, Cream and Goldman, right? So they recorded one note, and then, was it 12 times?
Well, they had 12-foot loops. They
16 times for each note.
16 times, yeah.
So they recorded the same note 16 times, and then they had... How they did it is that they had a loop of tape going round the studio, around the mic stand. That's how they used to do it in those days.
Their heads.
Yeah, and, you know, because this, and if you've listened to any of our shows, you'll have probably heard us talk about the Mellotron, which is basically an instrument that plays real, it's an old-fashioned instrument that plays real recordings. And it's a small piece of tape, about 16 inches long, I think, that when you press the key, it pulls the tape through and plays the tape back. You know, Strawberry Fields Forever, Mellotron, everything done by the Moody Blues, Mellotron. You know, you hear it all over the place.
Yeah.
But this is like a Mellotron on steroids.
Because they had mega.
You know, 16-foot loop of tape as opposed to 16 inches. But I always remember when going in there, the first time I ever went in, the first thing that they played to me was, this is the vocals from Not In Love, you know? And they actually had the 24-track and played it. Amazing. Amazing to hear it.
That must have been something as well, because I've seen them live in Manchester and it melts you. That's just the hearing all those vocals, it's just, well, it's stunning. I just love it.
It still stands up. I mean, the vocals, when you listen to it now, compare what you would do these days with digital.
Yeah.
They sound a bit crunchy because all the time, what you'd have to do is bounce them down. So you take a group of vocals and then transfer them to another bit of tape.
We're doing a bit of technical this week, aren't we, darling?
Well, we are, but it's hopefully it's interesting. But to get that sound is really hard, and we've done it an awful lot with your vocals because you're really, really good at singing multiple harmonies and stuff, you know. And we put it through an analog console, but we're not putting it to tape, you know. And it does make a difference. But I just love this song. I love Strawberry Shoes. I love 10cc. And finally, before we finish about this, is that their live performance, because I always remember, rather like Pink Floyd, they insisted on a JBL PA system, and it was really... And they had their own system. And, you know, they were all into perfection, live and in the studio.
And when you're talking about perfection in the studio, what was really interesting, which I didn't know about until today, was that when Stuart first wrote the song, Godley and Cream hated it, because he wrote it in the style of a bossa nova.
No!
He said, basically, it's shit. It's crap, get rid of it. And they dropped it. And what happened was that the staff who were working at Strawberry were humming the melody.
Is that right?
And he went back to them, he said, look, can we not just look at this again? And so Stuart said, right, actually I've got a quote because I love what he says. He says, I tell you what, the only way that song is going to work is if we totally fuck it up and we do it like nobody has ever recorded a thing before. Let's not use instruments. Let's try and do it all with voices. And actually, talking about voices, I've got a little triv question for you.
Go on.
Because I know you've just said that to me when we were listening to the track. Who is Kathy Redfern?
Who is Kathy Redfern?
Big boys don't cry. Big boys don't cry.
Broken lines, broken strings, broken threads, broken springs, broken idols, broken heads, people sleeping in broken beds. Ain't no use jiving, ain't no use joking, everything is broken. Broken bottles, broken plates, filled with broken hearts, broken words never meant to be spoken.
From his 26 studio album, What Is This Man Like? Oh Mercy, released on the 18th of September 1989 on Columbia Records. It was released as a single on the 23rd of October, where it spent 8 weeks on Billboard's mainstream rock songs chart, peaking at number 8. Produced by Daniel Lanois, my favourite producer of all time. Dan. And Malcolm Byrne on tambourine and keyboards, Mark Howard, mixing studio installation. That's the people who are actually involved in that. And except for Lanois, I've spoken to the other two, and I'm actually, I've spoken to Malcolm Byrne about perhaps doing some production at some stage with us. This was a few years ago now, but he's still kicking around. Mark Howard. And the interesting thing about this record is that it sounds amazing.
It does.
And it's the record that I always put on before I mix anything, because that is, it's a standard to rise to elevate your mix to, because when you listen to it headphones, listen to it on a great sound system, listen to any sound system actually, it jumps out. Those bongos, and the bass, because it's basically, well, it is a blues song. You know, and that bass, but it's so laid back, and it was recorded in a kitchen, in a bungalow in New Orleans. That was basically it.
In a rented house, 1305 Sonnet Street, at the corner of Perrier Street in Uptown District of New Orleans, baby.
Well, there you go. But, you know, this is part of a trilogy of records he did in New Orleans. He did Oh Mercy, which is this one, of course. He did Yellow Moon by the Neville Brothers, and his own first solo record, Acadie, which, if you haven't got those three records, you must rush out and buy them immediately, or at least listen to them on a good music service that actually pays the artist. There's not many of them out there, but you know. But anyway, do that, because it's a remarkable record.
It is. I think that's the one thing that I love about those three records, and also with Dan Lanois, the way he travels and he just sets up his studio in new spaces for new inspiration. I think that's where he just changes. So and that's kind of, I can relate to that, because when we've travelled and lived in different countries in Europe, it's been, you know, you soak up some of the sort of the spices, don't you, from the country that you live in. It feeds into your work. It informs you and it inspires you and it teaches you things that you can't get unless you're out there, you know, smelling the air and drinking the coffee.
Well, I think, yeah, the whole New Orleans, he really took to New Orleans.
He did, didn't he?
You know, and you can hear it. But what Lanvoir's really, really good at, he uses the people in the room.
Yeah.
And that's what he always says. He says that, you know, use the assets that you've got, the personal assets that you've got actually in the room at the time. And kicking around, of course, at that time were the Neville Brothers. And, you know, and they are all over this record. They play all sorts of things. Which Neville is it? It's one of the Nevilles,
oh, I can't remember.
Who plays bongos on this. And, you know, it's just amazing. And when you see pictures of Bob Dylan recording this, he sat down at a kitchen table, basically, with his guitar and a microphone. And he's just singing into a normal mic.
Yeah.
And it's just incredible the way that Lanvoir gets that very basic sound. Everybody's really relaxed, obviously, you know, and creates such a magnificent...
Wasn't it in the doorway or something when I read the book? Because we've got Dan's biography.
Yeah.
And I think he got... Bob used to like rocking up late at night.
Yeah.
And he'd be doing sort of like working through the night. And there was another thing as well that I only just read today about... there was an interview with Dan about describing how Bob Dylan writes his songs.
Right.
And he said he sat next to him for a couple of months when he wrote this song. And he said it was extraordinary because Bob overwrites. He keeps chipping away at verses. So he has a place for all his favourite couplets and they can be interchangeable. So you can see the same lyrics show up in two or three different songs because he cuts and pastes them around. And so it's not quite as sacred ground as you might think it is. Ist. That's the band name. Stamp You Out from their third studio album, Protagonist, released on the 31st of March 2023. It's fresh on the Kind Violence record label. Recorded and mixed by Michael Wally and Istis at Milkshed Studios. Great name. Mastered by the legendary Greg Calbi and Steve Fallone at Sterling Sound. And they can work with the national yeahs, Interpol. Ist, Stamp You Out.
Great. Joy Division. Sounds like Joy Division to me.
Yeah, it's does.
Vocal.
Adam.
And then, and also Interpol. It actually sounds very much like Interpol.
Yeah.
But, you know, no doubt they're really cutting some swathe through the musical industry in Manchester, because they're opening their album launch night in the Ritz in Manchester.
They did a couple of days ago.
Yeah, 1,000 people.
I know.
Wow.
You know? I was a bit excited, actually.
Fantastic, you know, and it's great to see a great new Manchester band doing stuff. Yeah, you know, but everybody goes back and looks at the past and stuff and reinvents stuff. But I really liked it. The first time you played it, I think it's really good. It's very substantial, you know. It's incredibly compressed. It's like a wall of sound. Go, you know, there's no dynamic range in it. But it sort of pounds you to death. It's like an elephant sitting on your head. But they're on tour this month, 13th in Glasgow, 14th Newcastle, 5th in Nottingham, 20 Birmingham.
Hare and Hounds, we've played there.
Yeah, we've played there, yeah. Yep. 21st Bristol, 22nd London, and 29th in Whitby.
Tomorrow's Ghost Festival.
Of course, yes.
And what's interesting is they released their debut album, Architecture, in the midst of the pandemic. The second album, The Art of Lying, released in 2021, it actually got into the UK top 100.
Wow.
At number 87. So it's great how you can see a band growing, and they wanted this album to be about new beginnings, a bit of a nod to the trials and tribulations of love and tricky family relationships, and that feeling, which is really intriguing for me, the feeling of being trapped by the past.
Now, do they have their own label? They have their own label.
Yeah, that's their own.
We're not exactly sure whether they've got a deal, but I think it's self-funded, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, because, I know definitely they didn't take anything out of the band for the first couple of albums, because this was in this interview that, so I was checking out the bass guy, Andy Keating, trying to find out what bass he played, you know, just because it's like...
Do you know?
Well, no, because I haven't had time, because I was just suddenly thought then, oh, what's that? You know, I wanted to be sure.
It's very, very growly.
I know.
It's very distorted, you know. But he's definitely taken a leaf out of Pete Hook's book.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
it's that sort of...
You can feel it.
But it's that Manchester attitude again. Yeah. It's got something happening about it. And, you know, we really like it. And I think we're going to follow more.
Now
Run to Your Mama from their debut album World Music, released on the 20th of August 2012 on Stranded Records, that's with a K, in Sweden, and Rocket Records UK. It was hailed as one of the best albums of 2012 by the Guardian newspaper, and you bought it for me.
I did.
Because
I knew you liked them, and yeah. I thought I'll get you a musical present. Little did I know. I mean, I thought they were rather obscure, but I mean, it's brilliantly bonkers.
Well, it is, and I think the backstory is quite interesting. I think you've written something here. Not much is known about this mysterious mass band.
Look, can we just stop that mask? Right. So,
okay,
they wear masks. So you can't see their face. I've got a photo of the band.
Let's look. Oh, goodness me, they've got masks on, so you can't see their face.
So, like, you know, we went to a masquerade sort of ball here in Portugal a few weeks ago, and we both went to the shop, and it was everyone's decked out with masks. You can buy masks really easily, can't you? Like, this, it was...
got the Eyes Wide Shut mask,
we wore our caftans from Morocco, It was rather eerie, actually. But the band, they're sort of like got monkey masks on, big lips, white death masks on, gold tribal big things on, big feathers sticking out. I mean, check them out. They look amazing. Anyway, carry on. Masks.
There's an apocryphal backstory that claimed that they are just one of many incarnations over the last 30 years of a small group from a small voodoo-worshipping northern town called Corpilombolo. Is that right? I think that's not too bad.
You do well.
Yeah. But, you know, it, of course...
Goat.
Yeah. God knows what, you know, where they get it from. But it really is interesting because the sound is sort of Afrobeat and Anatolian funk. It's like a psychedelic rock, you know. And they come from, well, allegedly come from Gothenburg in Sweden. But I'm not going to try and attempt that name again, but they might come from up there as well.
It's psychedelic, man, without the mushrooms, isn't it? I mean, really, it's trippy.
Yeah,
but
guitar. I love that ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding all the way through. Yeah, driving it along.
And
and
the thing is, it makes you happy. There are a few moments when you feel a bit sort of disorientated, but
especially at the end where they just stop, and it's like a bit of confusion at the end.
I'm always interested, you know, about how different artists write. Because we're in the middle of, well, towards the end now of writing for our new album, Starlight One. And they say that their songwriting process is strange because they don't get together to play songs. They play music. So every time they play, it's a new thing. So they never know what's going to happen when they go into the studio because they just improvise.
Across the evening sky, all the birds are leaving, but how can they know it's time for them to go? that deserted shore. Your fickle friends are leaving. Oh, but then, you know, it's time for them to go. But I shall still have no thought of leaving. I have no thought of time.
Sandy Denny, Who Knows Where the Time Goes. And this version was from the BBC session with John Peel in September 1973, written by Sandy Denny. She originally recorded the song as a demo in 1967.
What a song. What a voice.
Yeah.
She's, I don't really know too much about her, but you know in your heart you've got respect for her straight away. You just hear that voice. And you kind of know you're dealing with someone of gravitas, really.
That's exactly the word I was going to use, because, I mean, you know, Matty Pryor, Jackie O'Shea and June Tabor, you know, all give a run for her money here. You know, all these people, they really, you could hear them cross-pollinating. But, I mean, I think she's just great. And she was the only other person, apart from the Led Zeppelin band, that was actually recorded with Led Zeppelin,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
She's the only guest vocalist.
Yeah, the only one.
Now, it's on Led Zepp 4. It's the, let me have a look now.
Battle of Evermore?
Yes! You know!
Of course I know.
Of course you do. Well, you know, you basically bathed in, like, Led Zeppelin soap. You had underarm deodorant, you had a bubble bath. Everything was Led Zeppelin, you know?
I did. I even had a Led Zeppelin toilet brush. Yes, indeed. But, yeah, I mean, remarkable. But what I love about that version of it is Dave Cousins, who was in the Straubs, you know. He stopped performing now due to ill health, but and that is definitely a Vox AC30 tram.
I recognised it. I love that tram.
Because I use, and on this new record that we're doing now, I use Vox AC30 all the time for tram, and it is just fantastic. It's very different. It's a British-sounding tram rather than an American, you know. It's fantastic. But I love his part as well. It's very, very sensitive, and it sort of works with that just acoustic guitar. And she's obviously playing the acoustic, and, you know, it just works great. And John Peel.
I miss John Peel.
So do I, because he was so eclectic. Everybody from The Fall to The Buzzcocks to all the, you know, Joy Division, all these bands and some really odd eclectic stuff. And then he'd stick this in. It's remarkable.
Oh, I rang him up once, so I rang up the studio to try and get the address to send my tape to for my band. And he picked the phone up. I'm like, John, is that you?
No.
Yeah. He's, yes, it is indeed. And I just, I heard last night because I was driving. I was doing a late night love radio show in South Manchester. And so on my way to the radio station, I always used to listen to the first bit of John Peel going in. So, they surprised him and gave him this award. And he was really, and he said to me, he said, I was really emotional. I wasn't expecting that. So I said, anyway, I want to send you a tape in. Where do I send it? And I forgot, and I put the phone down and forgot to tell him my name. This is what I'm like, a big child. It's like, I can't believe that. Well, he shocked me. I wasn't expecting, you know, to
tell you wouldn't. That. I mean, no. you wouldn't just get a John Peel on the phone.
So, you know, it's, and I'm sure that it's just, what it did show me is that he cares, isn't he? He's just normal. He was just normal talking to everyone. He just liked music.
He did. He loved music in every form, every style and everything else, you know. And if it was jolty and off kilter, you know, he liked it even more. I mean, just a great guy. Just a great guy. Very, very sadly missed.
And so, my first folk band, by the way, was Megiddo.
Yes.
And I used to have long, my hair was like Maid Marian dresses, and I used to play the folk circuit.
Oh, baby.
And I've been to Cropredy. And, of course, Sandy sang with Fairport Convention. So it's a beautiful family, you know, with Peggs, Dave Peggs, is it? Yep.
Yeah, Dave Peggs. Yeah,
and just being there in that family of beards. It was a field of beards.
Well, I
and chairs
had a,
and
had
flags.
A chat with him in the White House in the Isle of Man in Peel. We were drinking beer together. Yeah, Dave Pegg and those guys. This is a few years ago.
I'd love to play Cropredy.
Yeah, it would be great. I really like it.
But she's for me though. It's like I wondered if she was Irish or not, but no, her grandfather came from Dundee, and her grandmother was Scots Gaelic. So,
because right?
You can hear that lilt and the way that she sings, because I sing very clear, very direct, you know, clear notes. I don't have that lilt, and that's something that she's had from listening and talking with her grandmother, I think, because she does this beautiful little. I can't even pretend to. Yeah. That sounded bad then, but you know. The way she used her instrument, you know, it was beautiful, just beautiful. Absolutely. I can't believe that she died at 31.
Well, amazing.
I cannot believe that. That's well, such a shame.
Well, it's the end of the show, I'm afraid.
It
for
is.
One more week. Remember to check out our blog, vibes.starlight-campbell.com. We're on tour in October, so
come
check
and see
our
us
website.
At a gig.
Yeah. And it's all on there. So look forward to seeing you. Next week.